This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Thank you for calling Cooking with Grief, a comedy podcast that explores the wonderful worlds of art, science, and history. Your call is very important to us. Please stay on the line. For the theme music, press 1. For a characteristically self-deprecating host introduction, press 2. Hello, I'm Chris, with a body like a lynched circus bear left to rot in the woods, and the voice of a goat kicked down 3 flights of stairs. To introduce a co-host, please press 3. And joining me as ever on this morgue of knowledge, it's Chris.
Hello.
To engage in small talk, please press 4. How are you, Chris?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Alright, given the circumstances.
The circumstances being that you're now a telephone message.
Look, automation is coming for us all. If I can head him off at the pass.
Yeah, well, then sound logic.
Be alright. Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, no, I'm doing well. We're still existing, which is what you can hope for. Well, I mean, it's not. But...
it's all you can expect at the minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, expectations, not hopes. Hmm. For a brief description of how the podcast works, press 5. Each episode, myself and t'other Chris bring 2 topics that have caught our interest, and we share them with each other, and thereby, you. To start Chris's first topic, please press 6.
So, let me ask you a question. Do you believe in Germany?
In Germany?
In Germany.
That it exists, or am I, like, rooting for them?
The former.
Well, unless it's an elaborate prank, I'm pretty sure I've been there. So I'm going to go with yes, I believe in Germany existing as a place.
Okay, well...
Are you about to tell me I'm wrong?
Well, no, I think you're right, and I think the vast majority of people would think okay. You're right. But there is a movement within Germany that doesn't believe that Germany exists.
The final doctrine of the party was to refute the evidence of your own eyes and ears, I guess.
Nice 1984 shout there. So, there's a man called Peter Fitzek. He's the self-styled King of Germany, but he doesn't believe that Germany itself exists in a sort of legal sense. I mean, he obviously agrees that, like, there's bits of grass and stuff, like, it doesn't, there's just, like, a void in the middle of
it's
Europe.
It's not like a sort of texture that hasn't loaded in properly.
Yeah, exactly. He does believe, I assume, basically, he's a German... I think he's a billionaire, or millionaire. He's a leader of a cult, because, you know, why not? If I was rich, I'd probably start a cult for shits and gigs. But he essentially believes that Germany has no constitution and no legitimate authority. And he seems to basically think that since... Because he was born, he grew up in East Germany, but he reckons that because Nazi Germany never really dissolved, it just sort of... I don't know why, it seems like an oddly arbitrary point. Like... Because Nazi Germany never dissolved, then, you know, the modern, is it called Bundesrepublik or something like that? You know, the modern German Republic doesn't have any authority. So he's carved out for himself a patch of land in Germany, declared it Königreich. It's 9 hectares, and apparently he's got about 3,000 people living there. And he's declared himself king.
Right, so Königreich is what, kingdom?
Yes, I don't know. you phrase it like a question, but you speak German and I don't.
Okay, keep talking. I'm just going to reach my German dictionary.
Apparently, it was previously called Neudeutschland, which I'm pretty sure means Germany. In his little kingdom, he has a state-run healthcare scheme, but I don't actually know how that works. It doesn't elaborate on details, but I assume it's just hands out paracetamol or something.
I was right. Das Königreich is a kingdom.
Okay. Thank you, Susie Dent, of the dictionary corner there. He's got his own currency called the Engelgeld. He apparently calls it, he has a coat of arms And the only problem is it is a bit, well, I don't know. He calls it the Fourth Reich, which is some
bad marketing.
Yeah, it's a bit Nazi-ish. I don't know what his... It doesn't elaborate on his personal beliefs, so I don't want to speculate. But the fact that he seems to claim descendants from the fact that the Third Reich didn't dissolve. There's some sketchy dealings here before we just declare it a whimsical.
Yeah, because it sounds like a tax dodge more than anything. Like,
oh yeah, so he has been arrested for fraud.
There we go. That was what I was gonna get around to. Is that it sounded like he wanted to like declare sovereignty, and then the German government went, no, it's Germany. Because it reminded me, like, you've spoken before about like wars that have never officially ended. And, you know, that sort of technicality of, like, is it Beric that's still technically at war, or was still technically at war, because it never got, you know, officially...
Yeah, it was mentioned in the Declaration of War, but not in the Declaration of...
of Peace.
Of Peace, yeah. Or whatever.
And then it also reminded me of, you know, like, off the coast of Britain, there were, like, people who if there were, like, abandoned oil rigs and stuff... And they sort of
they sort of
move in and then go, we are the Republic of, you know.
Yeah, I can't remember the name. There is one on an oil rig in the
like
North Sea.
Like Davetown or something.
Yeah, can't remember what it's called now.
But
yeah.
Like that's one thing to do it like offshore, but another just a big hunk of land in the middle of what everyone agrees to be Germany, and then just go like, you know, like, oh, yeah. Right, no, we're our own thing now. And they're going, no, you can pay your taxes. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And then, because he's got all these people that he says live rent-free on his kingdom, but then he also issues their currency, so which presumably he then transfers into euros so that he can buy stuff. But he's even made their own... So he's been arrested previously because he also issued their own driving licenses and stuff. And then he drove around... Apparently, he deliberately was driving over the speed limit because he wanted to be taken to court to prove that he had authority to issue his own driving licenses. And they just said no.
That's a hard nine. Also,
and then also, like you say, sounds like tax dodging and stuff. Yeah, he's also been sentenced to prison for embezzlement. Because, again, everyone deposits their money into his... he's made his own central bank, and then that's, you know, to exchange for his Engelgeld.
Yeah, it sounds like money laundering, because then he could arbitrarily... Yeah. It's not floated on the stock exchange, is it? So he can just be like, oh, no, sorry, lads, you don't get many Engelgeld to the mark. Not the mark. What year is it? to the euro these days.
This is his own little kingdom, but there is a wider movement of people who just don't believe that Germany exists as a legal entity.
They're German people living in Germany.
Yeah. So he claims not to be part of this movement, but is essentially like the same. He has the same beliefs. But like, if you were to do a Venn diagram, apparently, of like people who believe that the, you know, modern Republic of Germany has no legitimacy, and people who believe the Nazis definitely did, is apparently quite a lot to cross over. The thing with these things, when you try and talk about whether or not something's legitimate, it's always a bit like arbitrary. Like, at what point did something become legitimate? You know, because considering most countries are basically made of like one smaller... There used to be a bunch of small kingdoms that spoke similar-ish languages, and then one of them invaded the rest and took over.
Yeah.
Maybe married some of them. Like, maybe married the princess of one kingdom.
Yeah.
Like... You know, like, so...
It's just rule through sort of unification.
Yeah, it just seems arbitrary. Yeah. It's like, well, we've got, like, England and Scotland and stuff, and it's like, Scotland's its own nation. And it's like, well, yeah, it's part of the UK because England basically invaded it a shitload of times, and then eventually they kept intermarrying and stuff until they were like, right, well, we've got one royal family now. We're one country.
Yeah.
At the same time, that's exactly what happened like 1,000 years before making England in the first place, was a bunch of like smaller kingdoms invading. You know, like, at which point do you say, right, everything before then wasn't legitimate and everything after then is legitimate?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what like an equivalent movement for the UK would be that, I don't know, they don't recognise the authority of anything like once the Romans left. No, yeah. Like, oh, well, they never formalized all the paperwork or papyrus work.
I was just going to say, our thing's just weird, though, in, like, the four home nations, and obviously Northern Ireland and has its own sort of take on the issue. Like, that's the most contested, isn't it? But then, like, you got a weird thing where, like, Wales, technically, isn't as, like, you know, like, whenever they release stats for things, it's always, like, the stats for Northern Ireland, the stats for Scotland, and then the stats for England and Wales. Because Wales, for some reason, is like a principality rather than its own. You know, and it all stems back to 1,500 years ago when somebody invaded somewhere and did something. You know, and it's like, it seems a bit weird that, like, we're still using that as, like, the definition.
Yeah, but it also seems stupid to draw an arbitrary line under it now to say, like, well, it wasn't formalised then, so I don't accept it now. And it's like, you know, just get on board, pay your taxes.
Pay that, Wales.
I was thinking more about this German billionaire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. It does seem, like you say, more to do with embezzlement. There were some guys in Australia who, again, got done for tax fraud, but they just dug a moat around their house and then declared it independent and refused to pay taxes.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, on this podcast before, we've spoken several times about starting our own city, if not country, inevitably naming it after ourselves. So I get the allure, but I wouldn't do that now and just declare that, oh, my house, I do not recognise the sovereignty of the British government.
Do you not remember when there was a TV show? You know, Danny Wallace?
Oh, How to Start Your Own Country.
And he started his own country in his flat. Yeah. Semi-legal status or something.
He also tried a one-man invasion of, was it Jersey?
No, somebody actually did that. I think it was Sark.
Oh, yeah, I got confused. I know he did try and invade somewhere.
No, yeah, so in Sark, somebody actually did lead a one-man invasion, like, literally, because it's, like, a small island with, like, a tiny population, and literally one guy in a gun turned up and tried to invade it.
I think he also stopped for lunch on a park bench, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, I should also point out that, and I should have done this at the top, that this topic was brought to my attention by our friend's podcast on Germany. Who you can find at Twitter @on_Germany.
Dankeschön.
Which is a History of Germany podcast. They've not got up to this particular point in time yet. And
so they could,
whether or not this disproves the entire purpose of the whole podcast.
So they could either give it to us or wait till season 480 to get to the modern day.
Yeah, exactly. So, thank you to them. And that's it from me.
Okay, great.
And so over to you, Chris, for your first topic.
Okay, so for my first topic, I'll start off with a question. Chris, have you got any anxieties about public speaking?
I try to avoid it. I mean, like, I can speak in public, as in I can speak in front of people. But, like, yeah.
You can talk to, like, bar staff.
Yeah. But the idea of standing up on a stage and having to talk to people or talk at people would not be my comfort zone.
No, and I'm guessing that even further outside your comfort zone would be public singing.
Literally never.
Yeah, you never done karaoke?
Nope.
No intentions to.
Never not. No intentions.
No.
I can't sing. I don't want to. No, just no. No.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I sweats just thinking about it.
Yeah, no, I've done karaoke a few times, and it's a pretty awful experience every time, and like, I've got, like, a couple of songs I can sing. Okay, they're like, the right key for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, used to be in a band, but the sort of band where no one's really listening for the quality of the singing. But, yeah, the idea of doing it publicly is pretty awful. But I've got a story about one of my musical heroes, Aretha Franklin, who obviously had no qualms with public singing. But at the 1998 Grammy Awards, Pavarotti was set to sing Nessun Dorma as part of the ceremony, and 20 minutes before he was meant to go on stage, he claimed he was too ill and backed out, which is, you know, like, with 20 minutes to go, you think, just do it, maybe? That's going to be a lot of work for someone. So with 20 minutes notice, Aretha Franklin, who was like already there to perform something else, said, "Oh, I can do it." And it's like one of the most iconic sort of songs in opera. Mm-hmm. So she listened to... So Pavarotti had already done a rehearsal. So she listened to the recording of that once on a cassette player and then said, "Yeah, I've got that." And then said she could do it. So she rehearsed a little bit with just the conductor, but with no backing music, just to sort of run through it once. So the first time she'd sung it sort of properly was when she stepped on stage with a choir of 30 people and a 50-plus orchestra, and then knocked it out the park. And it's
isn't it like in Italian?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if Aretha Franklin speaks Italian, but I don't think she doesn't.
I didn't think she did.
But then that's like quite good just to like, even just to get the words.
Yeah, just to
right,
get...
Right, without just going, Mamma mia.
Ciao, bella.
Cornetto.
Frutti tutti. I don't know, it's not particularly Italian.
Yeah, it's like...
Can you imagine how awful that would have been if she just sang sort of stock phrases... Spaghetti a la carbonara. That'd be awful, exactly. Even if she did it. But so to go from like not knowing the words to like learning that and the music. I mean, it's a super famous piece, or maybe she knew it already. But even so, like to have that level of confidence and to pull it off is, I think, a level of obviously, she's remembered as one of the greatest sort of soul and gospel singers of all time. But to step into another genre of music entirely and perform it like one of the most iconic songs in opera, who's like, and the sort of definitive rendition of it is Pavarotti, I guess. Like, that was his, it wouldn't work the other way around. Like, Pavarotti, like, Aretha Franklin couldn't have like pulled out and they go to Pavarotti. Can you just sing Respect? In 20 minutes, like, even if he knows the song, he's not gonna step into the shoes of like the queen of soul.
You don't know that.
No, and part of me now does want to see Pavarotti try Respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Oh man, that does sound like, yeah. Just, you know, sort of on that, trying to do something in a language you may or may not understand. I think it was Ron Perlman had a, you know, a Hellboy and amongst other things. I'm sure I saw something about him. I think it was him, but I'm not going to 100% say it was him. But it was like, he was playing like a Russian, like a French person in Russia or something like that, like, was his character. So, and it was in Russian, but so he had to do Russian with a French accent. So he just learned everything phonetically and then just acted that way, because it was just like, you know, how do you put a French accent? It's like, right, you need to do a language that you don't speak, but as if you were naturally spoke a language that you also don't speak.
Yeah,
now get on with it.
Because that's it, like, without deep character work of, like, learning French and then being so fluent in that you could get a French person to teach you Russian, then, yeah, you've just got to learn it phonetically and sort of there's no room for improv, I guess.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to step in last minute and fill a spot? Obviously nothing as glamorous as the Grammys. Lower stakes.
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing on those sort of stakes.
Not even like in sports, like a position you don't normally play. Got to
probably. I don't know. Not that I can like. I mean, it's one of those things I played for how many years. I mean, I'm pretty sure I did have to go on sometimes and just be like, "What am I doing? Oh, just run here." In fact, actually, I did do that actually.
I suppose the sporting equivalent it would be, I don't know, some super important final. And your quarterback gets injured and you've got to fill in as quarterback. You know, it's sort of star role.
Yeah, well, I don't have anything quite that dramatic, but, like, I did used to play football.
That's football as opposed to football.
Yeah, exactly. American football. And I played on, I was a defender. And then the running back got injured and they needed a running back to go in. So I was like, and all the running backs were injured, whatever. So I went on. And, you know, they set the play and, you know, it's like switch right 27 zebra or something. Well, you know,
yeah,
whatever. And I was just like, I don't know what that is, but and like, where do I stand? And they went, you stand here. I was like, all right, yeah, got that. And they're like, and then you're getting the ball. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me, what?
So run that way, don't get hit, catch the ball. If you do, carry on running.
Yeah, well, it's just like, what do you mean I'm getting the ball? why am I getting the ball? Why are you trusting me with this? How about you? Have you ever been roped into anything?
Not last minute. Like, a lot of the sort of public speaking things that I've done have been awful, but I've had a lot of build up to be even less awful. I'm trying to think of anything. No, I'm not a very last minute person, to be honest. I like to have something mm-hmm. to panic about.
Exactly. I'm much the same.
Days in advance. Really get some knots of anxiety into that whole thing and really mull it over. I'm not exactly mm-hmm. spontaneous.
I don't know. I have a weird thing about spontaneity. I kind of want it, but then I'm always like, I like to plan things too much. So I'm like, no.
Yeah, like plan spontaneity.
But I like to plan some, yeah.
So yeah, so like, you know, going for a night out, and there are four locations, three of which you know beforehand, and at some point, a fourth random location will be sprung on you. That I'm okay mm-hmm. with, but I'm not like the person you call at 10 p.m. being like, do you want to go to this place? And be like, no, I need to work up to leaving the house. Thank you very much.
Well, it's like surprise parties would be my absolute nightmare because yeah, like,
awful.
Yeah, if I've got in my head that I'm having a nice planned evening on my own, and then I turned up and there were a bunch of people,
I'd fuck, like, out of my house.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, I'd just be like, what the fuck are you doing?
No, leave the cake.
I had very big plans. I hate it when people are like, oh, can you come out? You know, like when people, like, being on your own and chilling is a legitimate plan. Hey, when you're like, people are like, oh yeah, do I do this? And you're like, no, there is. Like, oh yeah, you're busy. Like, no?
Yeah. Well, you're busy doing nothing, you know?
Yeah. It's like, I have plans on, you know, tonight. What are they? Just doing fuck all.
Yeah. You know, what did you get up to this weekend? Oh, nothing much. Just sort of went to the gym, but then just hung around, watch a bit of telly, you know, watch the film. They're like, oh right, it's a boring one. They're like, no, that's what I intended to do. I executed the plan flawlessly. And exactly. Didn't say a word to another human being. It was great. So on that note, I think I'll hand it back over to you for your second topic.
Okay, so for my second topic, I'm going to talk to you about something we are wildly unqualified to talk about, which is Judaism.
Okay, yeah, unlike every other topic we talk about, but yes.
Specifically, I want to talk about Ethiopian Jews, also known as Beta Israel. And the reason I bring them up is because, right, so if I said to you Ethiopian Jews, like, I don't know, like, I assume you'd think the same type of things I thought, which is just Jewish people who happen to be Ethiopian.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you've got British Jews, Polish Jews, American Jews, you know, like, Ethiopian Jews, it just sounds like you've got Ethiopian Christians, you've got Ethiopian Muslims, Ethiopian Jews, like, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But like, and I didn't realize this, and it sounds like you didn't either, and I really hope that, like, our listeners, like, it's one of those things where I really hope it's not common knowledge and that I'm just like, guys, did you know this? But like, Ethiopian Jews come from a completely different set of Judaism to pretty much the rest of, like, the Jewish community, and they were essentially like lost contact, and then we, you know, like, then thousands of years later came back into contact, and they didn't have like thousands of years of like basically isolation but keeping their old practices, and then people realized then. So they had even had a debate, like the you know, the what's it called, like Jewish council, whatever, the you know, the ones in Israel, to basically mm-hmm. decide whether or not they counted as Jews. And then they decided that they did, and gave them that they had the law of return.
Right, so because 1,000 years ago they were practicing Judaism, then and that line's gone unbroken,
yeah,
then even if they're practicing an older version of it or yeah. older customs, well, it's still an unbroken line of
yeah, and that's exactly yeah. it. So essentially, what happened was, I'm guessing, because there's not a lot of, it's like, there's not actually that much, like, what do you call it, like,
sort of written history.
Yeah. Yeah, so what happened was, way back when, I guess a load of, you know, like the way people travelled around, and Ethiopia's, you know, sort of northeast Africa, so it's not that, in world global scale, not that far away yeah. from Israel. So Jewish people would have moved down there and settled there. And then over time, sort of lost contact and stuff. And then, you know, over time, Islam came into the area and Christianity, but then this, like, it's like a group, like a small area of Ethiopia kept the Jewish traditions. But what they were is they basically missed a load of the reforms that happened in the meantime. So apparently they, like, don't have rabbis, I think. But essentially, like you say, they've got the, and this is what I mean, I'm wildly unqualified to talk about this, so in terms of, like, terminology and stuff, I'm not there, but apparently it aligns perfectly with the rituals from the time of the Second Temple. So essentially, whenever that was, which I think is a couple of thousand years ago, those are all the traditions they've kept. And so modern Judaism has different rituals and different things, but it's essentially all the same starting point. It wasn't until the 20th century that they came into contact with other Jewish, yeah, with the mainstream Jewish community. And then that's when they all, it wasn't until 1977 that they had a discussion and they, you know, they all agreed that, yes, this is a branch of Judaism.
How did they manage to stay sort of isolated enough to not have the sort of advancements in religious practice sort of filter in? Just a secluded part of the world?
Or? Yeah, and also they apparently, like I read somewhere that they have, like, basically to sort of withstand influence of, like, Christian, what do you call them? Yeah, what's the word? You know when missionaries, that's the one, you know, when they go mm-hmm. around the world, stuff like that, and to, like, make sure they strengthened it. They had, like, monasteries, monks, which you don't really get in the rest of Judaism, apparently, but then, like, basically they put these whole, like, religious orders together to sort of, you know, strengthen their own beliefs and community or whatever against, like, outside influence. So they had to come up with their own practices to sort of...
Are they still primarily in Ethiopia, or have many of them now returned to Israel?
Bit of both. I think there's still some in Ethiopia, but then, yeah, they were given the right to move to Israel. You know, it's the whole... Yeah, it's that thing, isn't it? Like, if you're Jewish, you've got the... You can claim Israeli citizenship, can't you?
And have you got sort of approximate numbers? Like, how many people were...
There's apparently 120-ish thousand people in Israel. You know, when all these religions started, there was very little literacy and stuff.
Mm.
So it does make you wonder how many, like, other tribes were sort of various religions or various cultures were sort of lost. But, you know, and, like, how many others practiced in isolation and how long for before they sort of reintegrated and stuff like that.
Yeah, because what's interesting to me is there are obviously religious communities around the world from lots of different faiths and doctrines that they're not unaware of reformations or changes. Mm. They just actively refuse them, yeah, and they just practice a older and I don't want to say purer, but, you know, a sort of more, you know, closer to origin form of that faith. But they're still aware of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like just being cut off to the point where they weren't aware of these reformations happening.
Yeah. One thing I do know about Ethiopia is it's one of the sort of, like, more powerful African kingdoms, you know, and it, you know, famously, like, wasn't colonized. I think it briefly mm-hmm. was by Italy, like, right near the end of sort of colonization type thing. And even then, I think it ended up not going well for Italy. But, you know, so they basically were one of the more powerful states. So, you know, maybe that meant that, and again, this is speculation on my part, so don't take it. But, you know, whether or not being somewhere that didn't rely on, you know, wasn't forced into being part of another country's sort of trade routes and stuff, might have led to more isolation than that.
If they'd been colonialized to a bigger extent, obviously the threat of Christianity would be greater, or Islam or whatever. So yeah,
there could have been times where we know about it because it only happened recently, and so we're like, oh yeah, they've been isolated. But you know, like, if it, you could still have, you know, for example, a bunch of early Christians go off to somewhere that, you know, go off to, say, to the east or somewhere, and then essentially they could be isolated, could have been isolated for generations, and then, you know, even 1,000 years ago, but they could have spent 1,000 years sort of in isolation before being brought back into the sort of wider community again. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's, I mean, lots of, like,
the only sort of parallel I could think is maybe some parts of Russia that have a very, like, unique Russian Orthodoxy.
Oh, do
they? Again, speculation. But I'd imagine there aren't many places I can think of that would be so isolated. And yeah, I guess Russia would be one of the few of them.
And also, imagine if you were one of them, if you were Ethiopian, if you were in that community, and then finding out, you know, if you think that you're the only group in the world that does this particular thing, and then, like, one day you're like, holy shit, there's loads of us.
Like, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, imagine that. Like, it would change everything, wouldn't it? Imagine thinking, like, you know, like, say the Amish. You know, as far as I know, they're, like, pretty small communities, pretty much all grouped around, like, Pennsylvania. And then imagine if they found out one day, thinking that, you know, this small patch of Pennsylvania was the only, like, Amish community, and then one day finding out that, like, all of Africa was Amish, and they'd be like, holy fuck, like it would change everything. You know, you go from being like,
send them an email, yeah, or what?
Like, but let's say the main thing that gets me is just the fact that, like, obviously somebody had, like, recognized their, like, beliefs and stuff, and were like, hang on a second, this is all very similar but not quite the same as Judaism. And then they would have, like, dug into it and then been like, holy shit, this is exactly like Judaism used to be.
Yeah, it's sort of proto-Judaism.
Yeah. They've got, and obviously the language has evolved and changed and stuff, so, like, they've got different terminology for things, but they're, like, referring to the same thing. Like, apparently one of the things was, like, how they had the same Sabbath day and stuff like that, and they observed the Sabbath, and, you know, like, no work for, like, sundown to sundown, isn't it? Yeah, over the on the Sabbath. So, yeah, anyway, that's my tale of something I don't know much about.
For a change.
Okay, so that's my second topic. Over to you, Chris, to round us out.
Okay, I'll ask you for my second topic. Chris, what objectively is the best food?
I mean, I'm a big fan of the burger.
The answer we were looking for was fried chicken.
Oh, nah. I mean, I like fried chicken, but nah, it's not my go-to. Like, all things equal, I'd go for, like, a big old juicy burger.
No, I googled objectively, and it is fried chicken.
Fair enough.
Okay, yeah, nothing you can do about it. Maybe a fair answer is, what is the one thing you associate with fried chicken?
The kernel.
Not the answer I've got, but, like, I'll take that.
Go on.
But the thing KFC want to associate, or want you to associate with their chicken, is greasy Polaroids. In 2015, KFC brought out a limited edition bucket of chicken that doubled up as a printer.
What? Like, how? Like, a printer's, like, a pretty, like, substantial piece of, like, electronic equipment. And a bucket is normally just a piece of cheap cardboard.
Yeah, it was, right. So, you've got your regular cardboard bucket, yeah, and that's the top bit. And then, obviously, at the bottom is...
It's just an entire printer. That's not, that doesn't double up, it's just a printer with a bucket stapled on top.
It's all one unit, so, like, the bottom of the bucket, underneath that, is a Bluetooth printer. You take photos on your smartphone, and then via Bluetooth, you can print them from your bucket.
Why? A KFC family bucket is, like, say it's about a tenner. So let's say 10 quid. And that's probably, like, the most expensive bucket they do. Like, a Bluetooth printer's, like, 30 quid. Like, there's no way this makes any financial sense.
They sold it for $89.
Why?
Because, you know, when you're just tucking through, like, a lot of greasy fried chicken, just grease smeared over your face, the only thing that makes it better is showing those bloated memories. with friends slash on your own, because, you know, let's be honest, I'm buying a bargain bucket for myself.
I remember the time me and you went to, I think we'd had a half day at school or something. For some reason, we were in the mood to celebrate, and we went straight to KFC after school, and we went and ordered the family giant bucket. And, like, there's an actual family in front of us who'd ordered the exact same thing, and they asked them how many, like, plates and sets of cutlery they needed, and they were like six or something, and then they said to, like, what about you, and we're like two.
Me and him just gonna, in our school uniform, just gonna plop this giant bucket of chicken down and tuck through it, and imagine, you know, we both fondly remember that day. Imagine how much more cemented in our memories it would be if, like, you know, covered in grease and chips and bacon, chicken batter, we could have just put, you know, done a quick greasy selfie and printed it straight from the bucket.
If only.
It's a good idea.
Is this in America they're selling this? Or sold this?
This was in Canada. It was to celebrate so this was the Memories Bucket, as they called it. And it was released to celebrate KFC Canada's 60th anniversary.
Lucky Canada, I guess.
Grease from chicken is going to soak through everything.
You're really focused on the grease.
Look, don't get me wrong, it is delicious. But, like, the idea of keeping electrical equipment near hot fried chicken just seems stupid to me.
Yeah, well, the whole concept. I mean, I don't know if you have this, but how many did they sell? Like, was it a success, or did a load of people go, I'm not spending $90 on the printer and chicken printer?
It was it's called the Memories Bucket. Please at least honour it with its official name. I think because it was a limited edition, it wasn't something that they rolled out nationwide or with ever the intention of people being like, oh, this is my new staple. It was a limited edition thing, so I think they made a few hundred of them and people got them because it's a limited edition thing, rather than something that was necessary.
I feel like that's a nice way of saying we didn't sell that many, but we never thought we would.
They made a few, and people bought them. Wow. I had a look on eBay to see if any were still around, but couldn't find any, because I think the grease, which I will return to once again, might have made them deteriorate. There's a long line of KFC sort of novelty limited edition items. They made, you know, like, when you go, you get your tray, and then there's, like, a paper tray liner, A, to keep the grease off it, but B, also just to advertise to you while you're in the, like, you've already got your food, but you still need to be advertised to. They did a limited edition paper tray liner that doubled as a Bluetooth keyboard. It was literally just like a standard keyboard layout, but on paper.
Yeah.
They did edible coffee cups that apparently tasted like cookies.
Oh, that sounds nice, as long as it doesn't, like, disintegrate whilst you've still got coffee in it.
Yeah, it's like the soup in the bowl thing, you know, where you get, like, a hollowed out sort of
loaf,
helmet of bread. Yeah, and they pour soup in.
I went somewhere, I think it was called Hummus Bros, and it was the same concept. Like, I mean, you had, like, a bowl. Right, so yeah, so don't get me wrong, like, I'm not saying the bowl was made out of hummus. There was, like, a porcelain bowl. Then it was filled with hummus. Then the hummus itself had a dip in, and then that was filled with, like, stew or something. Britain, KFC, comes with fries, and everyone, like, universally agrees they're, like, the worst fries, but, like, it comes with fries.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently in America, mashed potato.
Oh.
I mean, I'm sure some Americans might contradict this, but now we go with fries, but no. I was informed on Twitter that, it's weird that they find it weird that we have it with fries, because to them it's a mashed potato like place.
I mean, I guess because it's more like, it's like what they call it, like soul food, like comfort food is like chicken and mashed potatoes and grits. And what's weird is doing chicken and waffles.
I don't know what grits are.
Me neither, okay. But I've heard them said about the
also
South,
biscuits and gravy means something entirely different. Like biscuits don't have anything to do with our biscuits, and the gravy looks nothing like our gravy. Like,
yeah, like biscuits to us is what they call cookies, but a cookie is a kind of biscuit. Like
a cookie is a subset of biscuit.
Rather than a biscuit being a soft, like, it's like a scone without dried fruit sort of thing. It's
odd.
Like, I'm sure it's nice, but
I can't go.
There's already
a name.
Call it something else. Call it a
dumpling.
Yeah, It's closer to a dumpling than it is a biscuit. Yeah. As a side note, there's a guy that go. Well, he doesn't go to my gym, but he goes to the gym changing rooms. Ooh. And he... Because,
you know, at the moment, you're just describing a pervert. Like, he doesn't actually use the gym. He just hangs out in the changing rooms.
It gets worse. I don't know. He lays down a towel on the bench, gets completely undressed, tucks through a bucket of fried chicken. Most of the time, it's the Colonel's finest. Sometimes it's a lesser brand. And reads the paper.
Why?
Because he's a man who is free.
Wow.
It's weird to be so... disgusted by someone's behaviour, but then to finish a workout and be like, oh, I could really go for some fried chicken right now. Because it just stinks up the whole changing room.
What?
And I sort of want to talk to him and to say, like, what has happened in your life that's led you to... like, because here's my theory, that the nakedness is clearly part of it, otherwise he would sit in KFC and eat it, right? Like, he could just sit fully clothed in a booth and eat a load of fried chicken and read the paper, right? So the nudity is clearly a key element of what he likes to spend his afternoons doing. Why not do that at home? So that leads me to the conclusion that it has to be a public thing, and the gym changing room is the only...
place he can be naked in public and eat fried chicken. Wow, what a weird tale.
And so that brings us deliciously to the end of episode 45 of Cooking with Grief. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're doing okay out there if you're still in lockdown, depending on what country you live in. But we hope you're staying safe, staying warm or cool, depending on the weather. Just
staying in a nice temperature.
Yeah, just staying ambient. Just classic lukewarm, if not cooler. I've been Chris. I've been joined by a fellow Chris.
That's me.
Who will say bye now.
Bye.
Told you. If you want to follow us on Twitter for updates, jokes, sideways glances about the news, personal questions answered, you can follow us on at Cooking with Grief. Or if you want to email us suggestions for topics or longer messages about feedback for the show, then you can email cookingwithgrief@gmail.com. This has been a Big Heads Media production, and you will hear an advert for one of our fellow Big Headers after the outro has inevitably wrapped up, so all it leaves is for us to say goodbye.
Goodbye, whichever you said, but I'm saying it again.
I think the second time was better. The second take was pretty good.
We'll use that one.
Okay.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye. See, now we've done a third take.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we've got to give the editors some ammo.
No, I want less ammo. I want one take.
Do it again. We're feeling...
I'm Midnight Agent Raw.
And I'm Okami.
We are the Super Media Bros Podcast.
Each week, we give a comedically informative take on movies,
music,
television,
video games,
and much more.
Put your shades on and listen to all episodes on supermediabrospodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yeah.
Shades on.
We're off.